Station number 16713, Mr. M. Waterston, Reel 7.
Mr. Waterston, Reel 7. We were talking about your preparations for going abroad in the winter of 1939-40, Mr. Waterston. You said you had had Christmas leave. Did your parents realise that you might be going abroad when you went back?
Why, we did. But a little thing had happened, you know, family. When we, after when our leave was finished, me and our dad being an old soldier, he didn't say to me, look after old Bob. He said to old Bob, man, Bob, look after him. You know, because old Bob was the oldest and we were never parted. All I said, it took the German army to part me and old Bob. And he made, yeah, they got a little bit of, don't you? He said, mind, he says, Bob, he says, when you write your letters, he says, when you go away to France, he says, you'll not be allowed to tell us. He says, when you start your letter, he says, put the cross of Lorraine, he says, below your address. Just take one, he says, and I'll know what it's for. And then he says, I'll. And I never knew that left of the war. I never knew that left of the war. And we had our leave, we had about 10 days, was it? 10 days leave or something, 10, 12 days leave. When we all got together, you know, all people are out and all that. We had dudes at the big club and all that. We knew that we weren't coming back any, you know, having any more leave. It was, the only leave we had and the only one I ever had. And we had parties and that, parties among ourselves and one thing or another. And then we left at Fenceausen Station. We all went down to Fenceausen Station, individually, got the train there back to King's Cross at London. And we just got into Blinking King's Cross when the train pulled out for Amersham. When the train pulled out, and we had to go across to another station so we'd get back in time. But when we all got back together, we all travelled together and we all got back together.
How were you looking forward to going abroad?
I never thought much about it. We had a friend. He was a prisoner of war with us and all. He used to live across the road from us in Bowlby Street. He was in the Norfolk Regiment and he was a regular soldier. And when we saw him, we used to say to him, hello, Harold, pleased to see you. He said, oh, no, yeah, you're pleased to see you. He says, as long as I'm here, you'll be here, you know. And then he went away. And then we heard he was going to France. And then we went along and followed him.
What do you recall of leaving the Cotswolds to go to France?
As I say, we'd started packing up about a fortnight before. You know, all our weapons and all that. And I went into the hospital to have this blinking toenail out. I couldn't get my boot on. And I think it was Wilkinson, the call on doctor. He pulled it out with a pair of tweezers. Mind, he did not give me, you know. Yeah, boys. And one of the lads, we had our inoculations in all our jobs and this, that, and the other. What about six jobs before we went away? Tetanus and vaccination and all that. And one lad had poison in his arm was up like that. And he used to come into the MI room every morning to get a rest, you know. And the orderly just used to gun up his arm like that, and the stuff used to swat out into a blinking bucket. Oh, God, it was. And he was a kook and all. And on the morning that we went away, on the 29th of January 1940, everything was packed except, you know, there was a rear guard left, you know, to look after the place and all that, so many out of each company. But our company was about 3 or 4 miles away from HQ. We C company, the same as everything. C company was down at, what they call it? Chadbury. And they set off about 6 o'clock in the morning. And the night before, it been snoring like hell. Snored did that. There was about 6 inches of snow when they all come down. So the Bren guns was to carry. So they left the Bren guns, instead of putting the Bren guns in the box, on the truck, they put most of the stuff that couldn't be pulled and hauled. The rifle slings, they hauled the blinking Bren guns boxes down with our rifle slings, pulled them along through the snow, you know, the sledges. And about 8:30, I went, met them, down to Charlbury Station. When I was using my rifle as a crutch. First bloke I said was Major McLaren. He was only a major then, Major McLaren. And he'd given me my stripe. He was captain of D Company, you know. Says, "What the devil's the matter with you, Waterson?" I says, "I've had him thrown ill and that, you know," and I explained to him what had happened. He says, "Well, why wasn't this report?" He says, "You could have been in charge of the rear guard, eh?" Just as well I wasn't, like what had happened. I says, "Oh, I want to go with my brother." He says, "Right, you are." I says, "Well, D Company's on its way down there now." He says, "Just make his way steadily down to the station." When they came down, they were shouting and singing the top of their voices. All D Company, the happy crowd they were. Shouting and singing, as the lads coming down. And then we got the train there about 10:30.
Were any civilians there to see you off?
No. You know, just an odd one, you know, but where the lads had been billeted and that, like.
But you we said went there'd been a problem with the rear guard. What had happened?
They never got any peers and out. They've forgotten. It was about 4 weeks after we got away back that they came. They didn't get any issued with any grub or anything or out like that. They were gone around the way they were living with the civilians. Till I got back, and the poor lad that was one of our mates, poor lad, he was only one out of the lot of us that got killed, a lad called Thornton, he was left back.
What was their job being left behind?
Why, to tidy everything up, you know, leave everything as we found it, collect the mail, bring the mail that was come, you know, collect all the mail and all that, tidy everything up. And Because when we first went to Charlbury, there was no there. We were just sleeping in cattle sheds, you know. And we got the Pioneer Corps to come through and come in the imp. With most of our help, we made the village reasonable. We made the abolition benches reasonable. And in one big shed, cow byre it was, we made a smashing canteen that where we could the dine hall at canteen and all that. Great, and that hall had to be pulled down and all that, you know, lid. And all that was done.
So you went off on your train about 10 o'clock, did you say?
About 10, between 10 and up us down to Southampton.
Had they prior to this, had they been telling you anything about France and what to expect?
No. If they did, I never heard any. I never knew nothing about it. So we went across, we got on the we got on the off the train, marched through onto the docks, straight onto the ship, and there was thousands there, guards and rough, and all that all coming across together. And when we got on, it had to pull out into the bay. Because there was an air raid at the time. Lord Ho-Ho, the night said the night before that the 68th and 9th Battalion, he says, are going across to France, to Cherbourg. He says, they'll not get across. He said we wouldn't get across. But we did. We got into Cherbourg.
Were you excited by this time? Was this your first journey at sea?
We're starting to get scared, I tell you. We were starting to get scared then when it was actually, you know, when things were starting out. A lot of lads, married lads, you know, they'd never been away from home, you know, or out like that, families and that. They were worried and all that. But you got the typical know-alls, you know, that you could, you know, what we're doing, this, that, and the other. Because we had mostly, but then, we had a lot of, we'd had been built up to scratter, you know, up to company numbers by all our transport and carrier platoon and all that was all made up of Cosbys. Okay? That's when the Cosbys joined us.
And these had joined you in
Charlbury.
Charlbury. Yeah. Why was this?
Because we were under strength. The reason was because before we left Houghton, with the lads got the chance of going back to the pit. And when Captain Goodenough fell us in one morning, he said, "You've got an order that anybody that want, because I mean the pits was partly idle, you know. I mean all those sergeant majors and everything, Tommy Lightfoot, Sergeant Major, Colour Sergeant Lightfoot and Tommy Thomas and Ernie Thomas and all them sergeants and all them, all our top rank sergeants and everything. Major McLaren, Captain Lieutenant Scott, and all them were managers of collieries. And they closed Everton Pit down. There was that many left. And after about 3 weeks, he'd give the order, said that, asked how many wanted to go back. There was only 80 of us in the blinking company then. About 80. And nearly all the blokes that been regulars in the 2 year went back to the pits. But if you're an NCO, you weren't allowed to go on. Just the privates. And we were left with nearly all our sergeants, all our lance corporals, our corporals and lance corporals, and about 20 men, you know, that was from other jobs.
And the Cosbys came to replace these?
We carried on that till it Horton. When they give the audience, says, anybody that wishes to go back to the pits, step forward. Nearly the whole company stepped forward. And he just turned around and walked away. I think he nearly cried his eyes out. He'd had that much faith. I mean, the company had been, you know, it was topping rifles, drill, topping everything.
This was D Company.
We were always top men in every, you know. And he had a terrific company, you know. And I mean, of get together lads and all that, you know. And when they all walked out the door, I think he nearly walked out where he was drunk for weeks, cutting good enough. And
but not all of them would go.
We didn't get any reinforcements till we got to Charlbury. Then they sent us these Cosbys and all that. But we still went up to scratch till we got to France. And we went across to Cherbourg.
Well, can we come to Cherbourg? This would be your first view of a foreign
country.
This
was the first time I'd been abroad.
What was your impressions, your first impressions of
dirty,
France?
Dirty, slimy old place. Wooden blinking trains and all that. Wooden seats. The Pioneer Corps had did big sawyers. Dirty, smoky black sawyers.
What's a sawyer?
Boilers, you know, that coke and boilers. That's what it was. Sawyers, that's what it was. And we got off the fell in, tipped all our gear down in the. Says, no, we've got to wait here till about. Oh, we had about 4 or 5 hours to wait on the station before we got our train came in. So you can have a look into France. Well, more straight away went to the brothels and all that, like, I mean, you know, the thick is out, like some of them. And Abraha, Lance Corporal Watson, you cannot walk, can you? I said, no, sir. He says, well, you can look after the kid. That's this champion. So anyway, old Bob and me brother and me all me mates, they went down to where the Pioneer Corps was serving out some grub. And it was like the first time I'd had it, and I've loved it ever since. Corned beef, mush and potatoes. Buzz, it was lovely. Thick as that. Get slobs on it, don't you? God, I could eat that, let come out in my ears. We had a damn good feed on. And with that, I think it would be about 4 o'clock.
Were there any French people around? Did you see any Frenchmen?
No, everything was just normal in there then. There was, you know, all the porters and all that, like, and all the people running about, like. But, there wasn't very many civilians knocking about the station. Because travelling and all that was all stopped, you know, in France in that time. About 4 o'clock, the usual ones was late and all that, like, you know, the same cloud you get in anywhere else. We got onto the trains. Well, yeah, I mean, I think it was about 7 of us, all friends, you know, and we're all straight away all into one carriage. Some slept on the floor, some slept up on the blinking rocks, and that, you know, old kit and everything in there. And we got on them trains, and oh, dear me, jog, 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 for a long way. Till we got to Saint-Remy du Plain. That's where we first landed. The snow was falling thick. Oh, damn me. The snow was falling thick, and we had 3 houses on the street, you know. And, of course, we were here. C Company was just a couple of yards down the road. They had the same. And then HQ, A Company, B Company and HQ was up in the village, you know. We always used to have a walk a couple of miles or something to get the HQ. We always up. And the houses were, you know, the road was built higher than the houses. And when the snow used to melt, it just used to run into. And they had these placard floors, you know, like, you know, but they were glazed bricks, you know, around there. There were floors that they could wash, you know, and nice carpets and out on. The water used to run into there. And we used to have about every time it rained, we had carried fresh straw into our billet, padding it open hot like, oh dear me, because it was wet and all that. We were sleeping on wet straw.
And it took over the whole house. Took over three whole houses. And you're sleeping in all the rooms.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The one that, you know, like, houses as we know them, you know, the stone floors and that and everything, you know. And it was there we had an incident. We used to do plenty of training there, mind. The first time we went out, had a night out, you know, it was a place called Allencorn. First time we had an incident there. I was the only Lance Corporal there, and I was on duty nearly all night. And I was on duty when this incident happened. Johnny Curry was... I went with a sick parade the next morning. Johnny Curry was here, and he started to ask me questions about what had happened and all that. Should you do, could you not do this? And could you? I says, Johnny, I says, you boys, I says, those got thy first incident to happen to them yet. I says, and out there, I says, your boys, I says, it was just hushed down quietly. I mounted a picket. I was on. Being on the early corporal all day, picket at night time. And I had four lads, every 2 hours. I changed them, two lads, at 9:30, and it was black dark. It was about the end of, you know, getting towards the end of February, end of January, dark nights. We had a Bren gun box at the door to stop the water from running in. I was in the corner. My brother was here. Harry Barkin was here. Billy Bambra. I went out there, posted this lad. I forget now what Carly's name was, Ramshire or something. Posted him there at the end of it was like an alleyway into the back to the other houses. It was an alleyway. There was no outlet here. We ever come up, we come from about the street or down the street. Posting there, and I had his gut. I went and reported to the sergeant that I'd placed, you know, that I'd posted the sentry. It was Harry Barkham, it was Billy Bombra that had been on sentry. He was just getting his shoes off and that when we heard a rifle fire. Harry Barkham jumped in between me and the box and he was out first, quick as out, and I was out. This lad was lying down, shot in the foot. He's gone round that way. Well, you boys, the sergeant, the guard sergeant, come down this alleyway. Anybody there? And within 2 minutes, the guard from C Company was up. And when they had shouted, stand to the guard, you know, guard turned out, that he'd him up at the HQ and they come down the road. And he says, this bloke, we scoured that place for 2 days. Never phoned anybody. But I say it was just across the road. He went into your house just across the road. It's there to out of this deer. That he went across, there was a house just across the road. That's where this deer, that's where it was only down.
There was no question that the fellow shut his own foot.
Well, that's what had happened. You know, that's what it was confusing you down to say note about what, you know, and but that's what had happened. He was weak as out, you know. He shoot himself.
Would there be
It was rather, he wasn't supposed to have. We had 3 rounds of ammunition which we carried in our pocket. We went to load, to use our rifle, and we had pickaxes. Where he took his rifle from, or how I got to fire it, I didn't know. Where he'd getting it from.
Had he a rifle with him when you got
it? He had a rifle, but he was only supposed to have a pickaxe. No, that's what it was. We had a pickaxe through the day and rifle at night. But we went to use our 3 rounds of ammunition.
Was his rifle examined to see if it had been fired?
Yeah. It would come out that he shot himself, like, and he was whipped away and back. We never seen him name there.
Were there many men who were reluctant they were?
A lot of them used to go daft, man. Some of them used to go nervous breakdowns, man, and that. Just be awful going on blinking seat parade.
Did they have an inquiry after the...
They had an inquiry. I went up to the MOS room the next morning with a sick parade and Trenty Curry, Sergeant Major Curry, you know. He collared us. Come on, give us a lowdown what happened. I mean, nobody had told me that I shouldn't speak or out like that, you know. I mean, I shouldn't have told him anything because he was on the brink in the inquiry. Or, why did you not? I says, listen, Trenty. I says, I just turned me back and got into the dunes. I says, nobody could have stopped him. I says, anybody could have stopped him. He says, do you think? I says, I wouldn't say that he shot himself. I says, but I think it was impossible for anybody, you know, to come down in the time that I'd come out, that came down the alleyway, got into bed. The lad that had relieved off sentry, he'd got in, he was just starting his boots off. Because we're allowed to lie down, you know, in the billet, because it was right on the job, like, you know. And I says, it just happened within 2 minutes. I says, I think he'd been contemplating it, you know, when he'd come out of the downs and all that. It was foregone conclusion. But it was whipped away and a couple of days it was forgotten.
The inquiry, who was part of the inquiry group that you would have
just
to...
Just the one, you know, the company and commander and the CEO name and that leg. It was just kept quiet, you know. Breeze hushed him away out the road so he didn't want to infect the other lads around like that. It was a couple of days.
Must have said quite a lot of rumours and talk, though, amongst the other chaps.
I mean, his mates was, you know, at 6 2/3 about it, you know, his friends and that and this. Quite a lad, he was kind of lad and all that, but he wasn't strong enough to cope with the hazard that we have minded. It was awful. It was terrible. It was.
What was terrible about it?
The weather. The weather, the building, the billets and that. Oh, damn, it was awful. And we used to have to mount guard, and your boys, Busty Stray used to think you were in heaven. And you had, when you went up on the guard, on the mountain guard and all that, we used to have an NCO's parade, you know, on a twice a week, and under the RSM, you know, all the NCO's. And he mounted, they had every NCO out, and as it happened, the guard came up, you know, to mount guard on the afternoon, 3 o'clock. And when he detailed the stick man, you know, called his brother, It had to be done a certain way to plough to for busty straight. And because he didn't, the lance corporal used to have to step out for him, turn round and walk round to the back where the orderly sergeant was. And because he didn't walk forward, take one pace forward, the short trail, come to attention, and then order arms, turn left, dismiss and walk round to where the orderly sergeant was. He had about 20 men, sergeants, corporals, NCOs and everything. Do you not? To find which one did it properly. There was not one of them did it properly. And he was tearing his hair out.
This gentleman was the RSM, was he?
The RSM. Busty Strayer. And for weeks after that we had guard mountain drill.